Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Logos Media's Unspun, episode 123. Holly and I are back to continue part four on our series, The Secret History of the Royal Society. And tonight, we're going to bring it all the way up to the present so that we can get into some good what's happening now stuff from the Royal Society. And for those of you who have missed the series, we've tried to do it chronologically, sort of through history. We had to do a couple of back steps a few times, but anyway, so tonight we're thinking is probably going to be the conclusion, we're hoping, and so it should be a great show tonight, and thanks to everyone who contributed over the last week. And so anyway, Holly, welcome.
Yes, welcome. Yeah, sometimes it's one step forward, two steps back, but I think we are concluding our series on the Royal Society this evening, so stay tuned.
And we're going to touch a little bit on humanism and transhumanism tonight, but that's probably, we're going to have to do a whole other show or series on that as well, because that keeps opening up into more and more as well. So let's see here. So last week we kind of finished off with Albert Einstein and how Christopher John Bjerknes and his manufacturing sale of St. Einstein, as well as Albert Einstein, the incorrigible plagiarist, were kind of where we closed off. We did, I think we got into Julian Huxley a bit last week. So, you know, and Julian Huxley coined transhumanism, and he was related to the whole creation of FM radio, and he also coined the term tinfoil hat for so-called conspiracy theorists, which of course is a term that was created by the Rand Corporation for the CIA during the Warren Commission on the JFK assassination to cover all of that up. But so tonight we're just going to be sort of plowing through I guess, let's see, we're starting essentially with Stephen Hawking. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that might be a good way to start. Oh, was there anyone else before that you have in the list?
Well, Stephen Hawking is kind of chronological at this point. So I guess if we close off with Julian Huxley last time, then Stephen Hawking, I mean, that's only, you know, Julian Huxley was inducted into the Royal Society in 1956. And Stephen Hawking in 1974. So, you know, that's pretty consistent with the timeline that we've been following already. So, you know, that should do it. And so Stephen Hawking, he was inducted, like I said, in 1974. He claims what they do is they create a dialectic. They have their own members playing off, you know, both sides of an issue. So one side of the Royal Society members, they promote humanism and transhumanism, and they're mostly humanists. And then the other side promotes caution about transhumanism. And, you know, Stephen Hawking, some suggest that he was a composite of several people, or at least two, and that he was, you know, his photographs dramatically change over the years, and that, you know, he's probably the longest living person to survive with Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS, surviving with it since he was diagnosed for 55 years, whereas most people with Lou Gehrig's disease, they survive under a decade. So, you know, this is one of the reasons. Did you want to jump in and add to that, Holly?
So I know he was doing a lot of research as a scientist, and was it The Brief History of Time was published in 1988, and that skyrocketed him into fame and fortune. And yes, he's, like you said, probably one of the most well-known and longest surviving people who had the Lou Gehrig's or ALS. And I've done a video on my YouTube channel about how there's some photos of Stephen Hawking's, or who we are told is Stephen Hawking's, on Jeffrey Epstein's island. It was a science conference that I went to. It might have been Little St. James. It's Jeffrey Epstein, and he's a convicted pedophile and a good friend of the Clintons, and just bizarre that there's these rich and famous science conferences surrounded by very young women and Stephen Hawking. So you can look up photos if you want. That's just a side note.
So I'm showing one of the photos here that they claim is from Jeffrey Epstein's island. Of course, he is not in the photograph there, but you know, it's one photograph that they claim is from his island there. But
there's some speculation there.
Some speculation there. We can't prove that, but anyway, so you know, again, he's the longest surviving person with Lou Gehrig's. Interestingly, and let me switch windows here. Now, when they promote him, let's see. What's interesting is you can see that they start promoting him as he was an atheist. His words on death and God from Time, and that's in March 2018. So we have this Royal Society member, which we see that the Royal Society has been attacking religion, especially Christianity, for the last 360 years or so. And so, of course, they, you know, and Time magazine was owned by Henry Luce, who worked with Gordon Wasson, and that was a CIA front as well. And so, you know, that Time magazine would be promoting this is just more of the same. So Stephen Hawking was an atheist. Here's what he said, you know, oh, so because he's supposed to be smart, even though, you know, he, you know, his claim to fame is that he explained by a union of general theory of relativity and quantum physics. So he was first to set out a theory of cosmology, explaining those together. And so, you know, basically, if you take two false theories and you build from it, that apparently makes you important enough to, you know, want to tell everybody your opinions about God. So now this is about the ALS disease or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. And we can see on here that about 10% of the people survive longer than 10 years. Most die from respiratory failure. And so, you know, again, he's one of the longest surviving people with this. So that's why many contend that that he may have been faked. Now, let me see if I can find any good photos that show him over the years. That would be interesting to find out. So here's some of the photos of him, and his teeth look dramatically different, I guess, or, you know, but yeah, here's a good one right here where that looks like two different people to me. Could be wrong, could be just years, but, you know, I'm not a forensic, you know, person who compares, you know, forensic photos. I'm a forensic researcher, but I don't do forensics for photographs, but notice the extreme difference in teeth in these photos and, you know, whatnot. If that's the same person at all, it's kind of hard to say. It could be, but, you know, we kind of see maybe the same indent in the forehead there. But this is getting a little bit too far into speculation probably for most people.
We're getting a little fringe here.
A little fringe conspiracy theorist here, but figured we'd bring that up anyway. So let's see, you know, a bizarre conspiracy theory about Stephen Hawking, strangest things we've heard in months. So, and this is one of them that goes in, and because so few survive beyond the 10% range, you know, so what they do is they say, well, because there's people who believe that Paul McCartney was switched, you know, it's just as crazy as that theory. When if you really look at the evidence of Paul McCartney dying and being switched out, the arguments that he was, including by Thomas Uhariot in Billy's Back, it appears that Billy Shears or Billy Shepherd actually replaced Paul McCartney after his fatal car accident. And there's quite a bit of substantial evidence, but Thomas Uhariot has a book, Billy's Back, and Mark Devlin has talked about that on his show, and I think he's sort of the representative of that. But basically, this book encodes what Billy Shears or the so-called Paul McCartney was admitting to the public, but it was wrapped up into a storyline to basically protect him from getting sued for exposing that he was not actually Paul McCartney.
So that's your double rap example.
That's the double rap example, right, which is a great fallacy to understand. A double rap is when a lie is placed inside of another lie. So, well, you know, and actually I usually use John Lennon as the example of that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But, you know, it's one lie inside of another lie, and how many lies they can go within one another, it's hard to tell because, you know, we've figured out that they can use generational markers essentially to keep it going more than two. So let's see. Now, where was I here? So let's see. Aside from being a member of the Royal Society, Stephen Hawking is also a member, or was also a member, of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences for the Catholic Church. So that's rather interesting because he's part of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, and then they promote him as an atheist. And we're going to see a lot of that same strange behavior throughout tonight's show, where somebody states that they're an atheist and then they promote religious views in the next line. So that seems to be sort of a theme going on with some of these people. And by the way, we appreciate any super chats, any Patreon donations, any PayPal donations. Holly, do you want to give out your PayPal as well?
Yep, it's holly.seeliger, S-E-E-L-I-G-E-R, at paypal.com, or I have a Patreon page, and also just subscribe to my channel and you can see all my work over there. I'm almost up to 10,000 subscribers. I've been saying that for like 4 months. But...
Woohoo! So maybe we can get you up to 9,800 tonight or over that.
That would be cool.
All right, so next in line, we have Rupert Sheldrake, and he became a research fellow at the Royal Society from 1970 to 1973, and he is, you know, and I should pull up some of these windows here so people can see this stuff, and let me just knock some of these out here. Rupert Sheldrake, now he got himself really famous a few years back in the fake dichotomy back, and I think it was 2013, where his TED talk was so-called banned. It was banned because it was complete pseudoscience, but he and Graham Hancock, and you can see one of Graham Hancock's videos up here in the top up here, but he and Graham Hancock went out and started up a big stir that his message of his new type of science was being suppressed. And basically what his type of science or pseudoscience was just, you know, stopping critical thinking, don't believe that the world is real, and we're going to start with Kantian ideas and primacy of consciousness. So in this stuff, you know, here's Rupert Sheldrake on Wikipedia, but we can see that he was a member of the Royal Society Rosenheim Research Fellowship, and there's Royal Society of Arts in London. So he's, you know, a few of these, and then, but he's been a member for a good time in the Royal Society and some of these other groups. But what he is essentially doing, and let's see, is he is promoting pseudoscience as science, and then attacks science as that it doesn't give a complete worldview, and then promotes more pseudoscience. So, but what he's doing is he attacks the science that the Royal Society put out in the first place, and then he's a member of the Royal Society. Again, here's that dialectic thing. They like to control their own dialogue, and thank you, Ben Piper, for the... donation just now. And so again, you first, the organization puts out the science, or their version of science, and it's not rationally based scientific method that Caleb and I discussed last week, but it's Royal Society's control, peer review system control of science that Holly and I have exposed for going on a couple of months now. So let's see. the belief system or worldview promoted by members of the Royal Society that then claims it is based on philosophical materialism and arguing for Kantian philosophy. So now they want to get away from any materialism and argue for, well, as we showed in the Logos Roundtable show on the Trivium Method on Sunday, basically they don't want you to do grammar. They don't want you to do the who, what, where, and when and basic studies of common sense. They want you to skip right to the why. They want you to put your conclusions before the facts. So, you know, he's out there. He promotes a lot of, you know, new age ideas like, you know, your dog knows 20 minutes before he can sense that you're coming home and whatnot. Parrots in the other room that do this kind of stuff. So then he says there's no consciousness in stars and space and planets and then the animals, etc. When he's trying to argue that it's all conscious. Space, stars, you know, space is the absence of anything. That's why it's called space. So he's trying to argue that space is now conscious. And then he attacks, you know, materialist science claims animals and plants are not conscious. Now, first we have to define what consciousness is, etc. Are they able to walk, move? Do they breathe? Do they think? Do they have cognitive ability? And so what he's doing is he's not defining his terms and then uses a completely fallacious foundation to build from. And, you know, it's typical, the typical pseudoscientific garbage that we see repeatedly and we've exposed repeatedly throughout all of this Royal Society so-called science and their stranglehold. So,
yeah, and I mean, we could do a whole talk just on TED Talks and just ridiculous all of it is.
TED Talks is terrible. For those of you who still follow TED, be careful. I mean, you know, back 8 years ago or whatever, they may have had some cool talks, but it's really gone sideways. So let's see. He attacks the laws of nature, and then he starts with the Big Bang promoted by the Royal Society the Royal Astronomical Society by Georges Lemaître. And so, you know, they attack the very ideas promoted by other Royal Society members, etc. So he's, you know, so but he starts off with the Big Bang and promoting a false theory and then, you know, building off from all of these things as well. So hopefully I'm saying that correctly. So he continually starts with a false premise in his, you know, like if you watch his videos, he'll start off with several false premises and then he builds higher and higher and higher off of those false premises rather than proving and verifying using the onus of proof for each supposition and then building from there. So he just jumps right past the not only the scientific method or the rational scientific method, but any rationality whatsoever. Let's see, somebody's talking about NASA in there. If we can try to keep it on topic, please, folks, that would be really appreciated. We do try to read notes from people in the group. That's why we ask to keep it on topic. It's not just to be mean. It's just that, you know, we like to be able to read what's cool and talk to you all about it. So
only the cool kids.
Only the cool kids, right? So if you're not cool, we're going to skip right past you. So let's see.
Unless you have a super chat.
Yeah, unless you got a super chat. So I didn't see what, okay. Love the Royal Society research, he said earlier, for that donation. Thank you so much for that. And anybody who wants to...
Yeah, we've got some good stuff tonight.
Anyone who wants to support, you know, we do a lot of research on these. It takes a lot of time to go through all of this. So let's see here. Rupert Sheldrake does is he states a number of false assumptions that he then calls dogmas. And he says, you know, all science believes these things. Most of them are things that were put out by the Royal Society themselves. Then he attacks them as dogma, and then he sets up his own pseudoscientific theory, which is typically, you know, some form of telepathy and whatnot. Are not impossible and promoting overall magical thinking, getting people, you know, to think in terms what would be what we would call the antithesis of using the trivium method, for instance, in rational critical thinking. He's going to promote the opposite of that. And so he cites, give us one free miracle, and while he shows most of his work is based on miracles. So you're not supposed to believe in the one big miracle, the Big Bang, or, you know, et cetera. So grant me one big miracle. But then he wants us to accept his big miracles. He attacks laws and what makes civilization civil. So he's essentially, or very coyly, promoting anarchy and a world government at the same time. So, you know, oh, we don't need to follow laws and this thing. You know, see, most people have the misconception that laws are just put on us by elite people who want to control us. They don't realize that it's a social agreement to keep society functioning so that we don't have pedophiles molesting our children, you know, murders and things like that, you know, so that there are laws and rules that we all abide by. If there was no rules when you're driving down the street, if people didn't stop at the stop signs, you go through them, you crash, and you can die. So, you know, that's an example of a mutual agreement when we all pull up to a stop sign. But, you know, the word king, for instance, comes from the word kin. And the king was originally the father of all of the kinship, you know, the top dude of all of the family. So they've really taken what kingship is and how it was the father figure, and they promote that, you know, we don't need laws anymore, or we need the New World Order's laws. We need the Royal Society's laws. But you know what? We're not going to even use any natural laws or anything. We're just going to use New Age foo-foo now. So the Royal Society is now really moving away, apparently, from rational, even pseudoscience, into just purely the irrational. So let's see. He argues that genes are overrated. Now, you know, I used to know, Kerry Mullis, and he was the guy who invented PCR DNA testing and things like that. And, you know, it would be interesting to see somebody who is actually honest in gene theory and gene research present information on it, if it is factual or not. He promotes the idea that there is a collective memory that because a giraffe is born acting like a giraffe, it's a collective memory passed down from giraffes, not, you know, genes, not, you know, innate part of the animal or whatever. And so therefore humans have a collective memory that can stretch through many generations or whatever. So, you know, we just apparently need to channel this. Again, he doesn't really provide any tangible evidence. From what I've heard of most of his work, he uses may and might repeatedly as if those were scientific terms, which that means, you know, if you can't state something factually, you should probably not be stating it. So, you know, posits one wild speculation after the other and then builds off of these speculations. So if we go into the database, let's get Rupert Sheldrake up here, member of the Royal Society. He also taught at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which had people like CIA researcher for MKUltra, Dr. James Fadiman, as well as Dr. Willis Herrmann there. Also another one who influenced this group was Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, whom we've already talked about many times, who faked the Piltdown hoax. He was a heavy influence on Terence McKenna, etc. So we're you know, and he's influenced by Darwin. So we're right back into the same group of people. Julian Huxley wrote the introduction for his book. So we get into a very tight-knit group of people with the Royal Society like we do elsewhere. So let's see. And then a Royal Society also influences Burning Man, which we've already exposed. And let's see, I think, who is that there? One of those guys was a fellow or taught at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, but John D. Marks is who wrote The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, and he's also who released the majority of MKUltra documents that we're allowed to see today back in the 1970s. Thank you, Smora505, for the $10 donation there. But So, you know, he also worked for the U.S. State Department and for the Bureau of Intelligence and Research. And so that's who wrote the main book on MKUltra today, was a member of the Bureau of Intelligence and Research, if he wasn't the assistant to the director. And so we begin to see these same patterns through here. But Rupert Sheldrake, he does a lot of dog telepathy promotion, morphogenesis, parapsychology, and, you know, promotes or influence the Rhine Center as an influence there. Let's see here. There was a, Park Street Press. That's another one. When you see Park Street Press and Inner Traditions as the publisher, that is not a scientific publication. They publish a whole heck of a lot of New Age books like Terence McKenna, Ralph Metzner, whom we've exposed before, worked with the CIA, and Timothy Leary out of Harvard. Richard Allen Miller we've had on before. He was Office of Navy Intelligence, Stanford Research Institute. He's a big Satanist and Crowleyite, et cetera. Ram, Richard Allen Miller, if that doesn't tell you the secret wink, wink of his name. Ram, of course, is, you know, like Baphomet. But so, you know, a lot of these guys are published by Park Street Press. So that's a big clue in when you see that publisher that they are promoting New Age and psychedelics, and that is the agenda. And that's, of course, just my opinion for the litigious in nature. And so he also is at Harvard University, of course. You know, we have many of those whom we've exposed out of Harvard already. And the 100th Monkey, which has been many times disproved, is a big influence on Rupert Sheldrake as well. So let's see. I think that's about it for what I have on Sheldrake.
Could I just have two comments? So first of all, just something funny in the chat. Someone says, Kander says, Jan said Huxley, so drink. So is that like the drinking game? Is when,
oh, yeah. Well,
Jan says Huxley, right?
Well, I hope they hold their glasses for now because we're going to be mentioning Huxley more. So,
or drink tea.
Yeah. I've got, you know, some ice cold water here.
So the other thing I want to say is I was kind of confused about that because I had been in 2013, I had been watching Sheldrake videos and you said Graham Hancock as well, just some of that sort of stuff. Ancient Aliens was all over the TV and stuff like that during that time. So why do you think the Sheldrake talk was banned? The 2013, that talk that you're referencing, like, what do you think is the PR behind that?
Well, you know, it's like, it's probably the same stunt as when Timothy Leary was quote-unquote fired from Harvard from Andrew Weil publishing in the Harvard Crimson against him and Ramdas or Dick Alpert. And so, you know, basically they stage the getting fired of Leary and Alpert so that it looks like Harvard is trying to suppress their spiritual message. And then, so to me, it looks like the exact same tactic that that Rupert Sheldrake and the Royal Society used on the TEDx talk is, you know, oh, TEDx is supposedly trying to suppress our spiritual message of this new science, you know, or new hyperbole or whatever. So therefore, it's going to get far more views. I mean, this is a re-upload, and it's got 1.5 million views on this channel. Science Delusion banned on TED Talk, we can see here. Never mind that it's complete pseudoscientific garbage, and he's selling an agenda. But, you know, you just got to go along, you know, with their constant agenda. So if you don't have the trivium and you don't study logic and critical thinking, et cetera, you might fall prey to that. Now, Rupert Sheldrake was also pals, I should mention, with Jiddu Krishnamurti. And, of course, Jiddu has worked closely with Aldous Huxley. Ding, ding, ding. Drink, folks. And so, you know, we can't ever pass up these guys. But, you know, he was very much into the Theosophical Society and Theosophy and you know, published by the Gallants Limited that we exposed with Jacob Duhlman last year, and a lot of that good stuff. So I, of course, publishers are typically intelligent sells, and we already mentioned, you know, some of these others in here tonight. So just, you know, be careful if, you know, if a publisher is publishing a whole lot of pseudoscience, and just because it sounds good doesn't mean it is. And also be careful of the forever appealing to authority, appealing to someone because research is ancient, it's therefore proved, and this sort of fallacy. You know, you should always question fallacies like that. That's the ad verecundium. Question if something is true just because people have believed it for a long time. Usually it is not. So let's see. I just wanted to see if I had missed anything else in here. There is a couple that I may have missed there, but let's see here. Just going back a little bit. You know, worked with Terrence McKenna. I think one of them wrote an intro on one of the other one's books or whatever. I forget the exact association between these two, but Terrence McKenna has got so many intelligence associations in his background. People think that I base my decision that Terrence was CIA or FBI based on that one quote, but aside from the one quote, which is a primary citation and debunks anything that's secondary on its own, that isn't all that we base what, you know, what we look at on Terrence McKenna. You can see a bunch of the connections to McKenna's background here in the database, and most of these are intelligence cells. Joseph Tussman and the Tussman Experimental College is a really interesting one that McKenna went to and whatnot. But of course, Joseph Tussman was also, I think it was him or Meiklejohn was on the cover of Time magazine, if you know, and also was worked in the U.S. Army intelligence. So always with the intelligence connections, you never get too far with these things. Sorry, I didn't have another Huxley mention right there for y'all. You know, you're going to have to hold tight for a few minutes.
So people in the chat said they're mentioning it's called the Streisand effect, where it's like you say you don't want some, you get banned, or you say you don't want something and it just causes more of a stir. And it makes me wonder about, let's just say, oh, Jordan Peterson, like if he gets fired by Harvard,
well,
you know.
Well, he took over Leary's position at Harvard. So who better than to use that same tactic than someone who took over Leary's own job there? I mean,
yeah,
it's like,
that would be pretty telling, huh?
Oh, it's just coincidence, wink, wink. You know, but, you know, it's possible with some of the news websites that were banned, you know, this week, you know, and if it ever happens to me, I'm saying right now, I did not do it on purpose, you know, so people will often level at me, well, you've never been banned, so therefore all your research is false, rather than just checking the research itself, you know.
You're not going to pull a PR stunt like that.
I'm not going to pull a PR stunt like that. If my site goes down, it's actually down, and I'll try to put out an IP address or something somewhere for y'all, but, you know. So next we have, you know, our magic meme maker. Do you want to go into the magic meme maker? Do you want to touch on him a little bit?
No, I think he would be better.
All right, so, well, of course, I'm talking about Richard Dawkins, who coined the word meme, and so that is his neologism. And so he was a member of the Royal Society officially in 2001 and Royal Society of Literature in 1997. And of course, he promotes atheism. He promotes transhumanism as religion while he promotes atheism. So a bit of a conundrum there. And let's see. And as somebody else just said, one of the shows that was shut down made at least 2,000 earlier from donations because their website was shut down. So let's see. He promoted, Richard Dawkins promoted Joe Atwell, my former co-host's book. And that should have been a huge red flag at the time, which I didn't realize. But, you know, so anything that attacks Christianity and Logos and living in truth, that's really what the Royal Society promotes. So we can see them, you know, out there stirring all of these specific types of subjects. So in 2006, he published a book called The God Delusion. So what he does is therein he sets up a straw man argument about what God is and then attacks his own straw man argument rather than realizing that God is truth. And let me see if I can find the quote to paraphrase. Let's see here.
That book damaged my life.
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure. Hippocrates, let truth be thy God and let God be thy truth. So, and that's if that quote is exactly verbatim. Someone sent that to me. I have not fact checked it. It's just very apropos. So I wanted to mention that. But, you know, so what you do is you take people away from the knowledge that God is truth, and then you tell them that God is a delusion, and you give them a whole false argument, and then you mislead them through that false argument. Now, you've read The God Delusion. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yes. So I was raised Christian, used to love to go to church on Sunday, all that sort of stuff, like pray before bed, all that stuff. I was a good kid. And then when I was in college, I think I was like 18 or 19, someone was like, oh, you got to get, it was someone who was like into Emil Durkheim and suicide and like talking about Anomi, and gave me a copy of God Delusion and told me to read it. And even though, like, if you read the introduction or whatever, he basically says, you know, I can't prove that God's not real. Even though he says that in the intro, and I was like, you know, I thought I could brush it off. Like, just being, you know, 18, 19, reading it, it put that little bit of doubt into my head. And I started to worry and wonder if I was just praying to myself. And, you know, but he... like, I feel like that's when things, that and my parents' divorce, like, not to get too personal here, but that sent me on a downward spiral, you know, and a transgression. And so, you know, sometimes I think about the South Park episode of Richard Dawkins, and helps me get over that low time in my life.
Well, you know, I don't remember which book specifically it was that led me down that path, but I went to a Christian school as a kid and everything, and ended up going, you know, taking many years to figure out what it was, you know, how they used all of this deception and trickery to mislead us down all these rabbit holes into their delusion. So let's see. And I wanted to also mention that the video, the Genesis Theory Part 1, does a pretty solid job of thanks for the bone and Common Conspiracies. He just donated $2. Thanks for that.
We need to start making our own bone broth, powdered bone broth.
Oh yeah.
I'll get started on that.
Don't make me gag. Powdered bone broth.
I make the best powdered bone broth, you guys.
Holly is an awesome cook, by the way. She is just an awesome cook. So let's see. So he just donated another $2 with broth in it. That's hilarious. All right. So trying to get back on topic here. So the video, the Genesis Theory Part 1, and I haven't watched Part 2 or 3. I hear that they go off the deep end on a few points, but Part 1 does a pretty solid job at refuting Richard Dawkins. And again, you know, interestingly, and I should pull him up in the brain as well. Let's see. Sorry, just a second here. You know, and this new version, I can actually have multiple windows open at once. I should just have them all open and ready as tabs across the top. That would be like a lot smarter way to go about it. But he was a zoologist. And of course, are you ready, folks? Julian Huxley was a zoologist as well. Lots of overlap there. So you all playing the drinking game, you can go for that again. He was a member of the New College at Oxford. And let's see, Sir Victor Gallant shows up there again, whom I've already mentioned tonight. And he created the Council for Secular Humanism. Actually, the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science merged into the Council for Secular Humanism. Of course, we have this red because that's high intel work usually helped to be created by Spymaster John Dee. And, you know, so we have the same typical people in the background of this. Emanuel Swedenborg shows up, you know, if we start going through all of these connections. And here we go again, ladies and gentlemen. Julian Huxley created or was one of the founders between the humanists and Julian Huxley. There it is again, folks. And Albert Einstein were members of the first Humanist Society of New York that was founded by John Dewey. And he was a member of the Century Club, which I've exposed many times in the past, was headed by people like Alan W. Dulles, the former head of the CIA, other people, infamous types that were there, Joseph Campbell, Gordon Wasson, whom, of course, was MKUltra Subproject 58, Henry Luce, who worked for ran Time Life magazines, which we've already mentioned. Carlos Castaneda had lunch with Gordon Wasson at the Century Club. Several bankers, Frank Altschul, his son, George F. Keenan, the former ambassador to the Soviet Union. But, you know, I recommend people go through these because you can really start to see the connections and how these, you know, John Maynard Keynes, there's another big one, John Foster Dulles. But, you know, this is, it really begins to reveal how the intelligence cells work in the background. So, you know, today, and let me switch windows here again, Richard Dawkins, and let me skip down here. We forget to show these things on Musk, or we haven't gotten there yet, so I'm probably giving some stuff away a bit early. So, all right, so Richard Dawkins, today his agenda is promoting cannibalism, and he wants to grow lab-grown human meat to feed us with. You know, so again, when you put this in perspective, and this is the Washington Times, but when you put this in perspective of creating the fall, so, you know, they promote all forms of degeneracy, drugs, pop culture, rock idols, like little rock idols, pornography, pedophilia, gay marriage, and now they are going for new lows in the promotion of cannibalism. So this is what your so-called scientists or pseudoscientists promote today. They promote crap like the, you know, moles, the taboo against cannibalism. Oh, good grief. We don't want that ad there. Dawkins wants to eat human meat. So, you know, apparently, you know, I won't make a husband and wife joke there. I'll just skip that. So anyway, moving on. Would you eat human meat grown in a lab? Controversial scientist Richard Dawkins suggests it could eradicate the taboo against cannibalism. Now, well, do we need to eradicate the taboo against cannibalism? Why is it important to eradicate that taboo? And why is the Royal Society behind eradicating that taboo? But why, you know, I mean, you have to begin to question these things if it's even good to begin with. So if people lack, you know, critical thinking, they might buy into this. Oh, yeah, well, maybe, you know, we should all go out and be like Jeffrey Dahmer next, you know, just, you know, putting bodies in our fridge and freezer and eating stuff anytime. So, of course, lab-grown meat will slip down as eventually into people committing murders to eat as they have in the past. But, oh, it's just a taboo, you know, never mind all of the implications there. But, you know, so the idea is to get you away from natural law and truth and get you to do demoralizing behavior. Did you want to add something to that?
Just that, yeah, it's just, it's kind of hard to believe at times, you know, it's just that this sort of stuff is starting to be openly promoted. And people in the chat mentioned, as far as TED Talks, TEDx Talks, there was one in Europe. I haven't watched it just because I get so grossed out by this sort of stuff. But there's people calling for the normalization of pedophilia.
So absolutely. Just, and who was doing the videos for that? Was it not TED? There it is again.
Yeah. So it's just, I'm just, it's hard to believe at times, honestly. So But this is the times that we live in. So.
Well, yeah. And if it's, you know, if there's degeneracy and pseudoscience behind it, you can almost guarantee the Royal Society and some of these related organizations are going to be out there promoting it. Now, I do want to touch on a little bit more about the Humanist Society, since we were just discussing that. And the first Humanist Society of New York, the Humanist Manifesto, Raymond Bragg and Robert Morse Lovett, Roy Wood Sellers, they promote the state superior to the individual. Basically what they promote, you know, they're also, from what we can tell, is they were also behind a lot of the rewriting of history post-Tartary, all of the Scaligerian chronology, etc., that is out there and promoted as official history today. That appears to have been in large part done by the humanists. Now, let's see. So one of the originators, thanks Polygonal for the $5, much appreciated. You know, Sir Thomas More was one of the first humanists. Let me see if I can find him here. And Sir Thomas More is also who brought us communism. He's one of the first people to create communism, and he published it in his book Utopia. And so, you know, this is where these ideas come from. And of course, the diggers and the levelers, which we've exposed a number of times with the Merry Pranksters more modernly. Thank you, Anthony. Much appreciated for the $10 there. Woo! But the diggers and levelers were, you know, part of, they came out of Salem, which we've exposed. And then there, more anciently, they were tied to, you know, Europe, to England, et cetera, to Cromwell, the ranters, the diggers, the fifth monarchists, et cetera. And these guys were against any form of social rule, et cetera. It was basically anarchy and communism is what most of them promoted. And we can see anarchy show up here. But again, you know, and Muggletonianism, the Muggles, you know, those of you who've seen Harry Potter, that's probably where that comes from. But so they're behind all of these post-Puritan movements. Of course, we've shown many times in previous shows that the Puritans were Jewish. They weren't Christian. They did put on a Christian hat and play Christians on TV or in the literature. Sorry for the funny. But this is, you know, who originated these ideas. And then later down the line, we have the Royal Society, as Holly and I exposed on the last episode on this. Communism, and you know, Karl Marx was a member of the Royal Society. And then you get the Fabian Society promoting communism, which is very similar. And Gallants and some of these other people promoting this same garbage. So always question if you're being fed, you know, stuff by these people, you know, and there's a reason why I've been putting this database together for 11 or 12 years now, so that, you know, we can see all of the connections between these people and their agendas in you know, and it's just an overview, like a 50,000-60,000 foot view. But then if you get in here and look, you can check all of the citations that we have in here, which go through and explain everything in the tabs and in the notes, etc. But you got to go through and study it. It's not just a bunch of incoherent strings brought together that don't mean anything. So let's see. Oh, let me pull up the brain database here. So the Royal Society, you know, Julian Huxley, again, he's another promoter of the drink. Humanist drink. And, you know, Thomas Huxley, previously, who was a member of the Royal Society drink, he promoted Darwinism. And of course, Darwin was a member of the Royal Society as well. But they all promote this humanist idea. And then so Julian ties to the Royal Society and eugenics again. So we have all this eugenic stuff. So the Royal Society is out there promoting a lot of the population control, like transgender, trans sexuality, etc. Because if you don't have children and family, that's eugenics. You're wiped out. And if, you know, you want to call it dysgenics or whatever, it's lifting the elite up and it's pushing us out. So there's two ways to look at eugenics. And so let's see here. Julian was an avid eugenicist, key figure behind the humanist movement, coined the word transhumanism. So, you know, that's very important. He also coined tinfoil hats. There, let me see, where is somewhere in there. It's the transhumanist one. And let's see, which is basically, it's, you know, what they're trying to do is promote the idea that there is no right and no wrong, that they want to promote moral relativism so that people just do whatever. There's no moral code, there's no right and wrong, and society becomes totally fallen, and then it's easy to enslave everyone. So, you know, it's birthing the new man, essentially, in a sense, through the center of the Star of David rather than through logos and truth. And then I've already discussed John Dewey there, and he was a member of the CIA Front the Century Club. And I mentioned Gordon Wasson and Alan Dulles there. Dewey was influenced by characters like Wilhelm Wundt. So let me get back over to Dewey. Again, I'll get better at this new version here. And
Wilhelm Wundt?
What's that?
Wilhelm Wundt?
Wilhelm Wundt. So let's see. He was influenced by guys like Wilhelm Wundt, and Wilhelm Wundt, of course, influenced another organization called the Tavistock Institute, which is very similar to the Fabian Society and the Royal Society, etc. And he was a big influence on Edward Bernays, who, of course, is the father of propaganda and this sort of stuff. But, you know, so people can get into the database on the Logos Media website and go through some of these. He was also associated to William James, who, of course, was influenced by Emanuel Swedenborg and was the head of the, Harvard University Department of Psychology. He basically founded that, was the first person. He also wrote The Varieties of Religious Experience, which starts off with a number of false premises and then sets out to ally drugs with those premises, which, of course, I bought into at one time. And so, you know, that's all who were tied to Wundt there and, you know, Titcher, et cetera, down there. So, anyway, John Dewey.
Jan?
Yes?
Could you put the link to the brain in the
chat
too? People are asking.
Sure.
Yeah, they want to see it.
All right, so the brain database. Yeah, and, I, you know, for those who don't know, it is up on the, here, I'll just show people where it's at here. It's up on the Logos Media website, and you just click right there on brain on the top bar. And or, you know, on this rotating banner, it'll show it at times too. But it'll show up here on the embedded page, or you can click on this here and open it up on the web browser version there, and you can browse through it. And that is the live version. That is the one that I am currently using for most research, and you can just go through everything right there. So hopefully that makes it a little easier for people to find that.
Someday you'll have an app.
Oh, there is a brain database app, but that's a whole other, you know. I mean, are you talking about a Logos Media app? That would be probably good to have.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, so when they shut me down, people can get to my website still. So let's see. Dewey signed on to the Humanist Manifesto in 1933. Wink, wink, there's that 33. And so let's see here. Again, you know, we've already mentioned Huxley. So, I mean, I guess I could slip right there. But and of course, Albert Einstein was a member of the Humanists. So all of these guys, they connect into these same things. So again, you know, the Humanists, it appears, are who created the fake chronology under, you know, via Joseph Scaliger, et cetera, the Scaligerian chronology, rewriting history. And if people want to know more about that, they can study Anatoly Fomenko and his 100-plus books on the subject. Or if that's too much, and I recommend you at least read History, Fiction, or Science, Book 1, but also check out the 6 or 7 episodes that Jacob Duhlman and I did on Scaliger, and you can find that on the, just by searching Scaliger on the website, which is Scaliger, And let's see, Rhian Eisler, more recently, is a humanist. And let me see if I can find her here. Goodness. So Rhian Eisler, of course, worked with CIA or FBI operant Terrence McKenna. And she and Terrence did some shows together. And she was also a member of the Club of Rome, as well as the Club of Budapest. You know, it ties right in there. So we're skimming really closely to the same people that Jacob Duhlman had dug up on his research on these other groups with Sir Victor Gallant, et cetera.
Thanks, Brian, for the donation.
Oh, I didn't see that. So, yes, indeed. Thank you for the $20 donation. That's hugely appreciated. So, you know, Sir Victor Gallant and Gallant's LTD, and there's Jiddu Krishnamurti we discussed earlier. Of course, Arthur Koelstra, he was another eugenicist that worked, you know, he had written stuff that Leary and them all quote, but wrote The Ghost in the Machine, etc., on pedomorphosis, or using children to morph society. So this is why they promote the drugs and the transsexualism and all of this stuff to children and whatnot. That's all Arthur Koelstra, this guy here. So we're kind of segueing a little bit, but I thought it was important to touch on some of these humanist connections here, and hopefully we haven't worn it totally out here. Now
we should do a show just on origins of humanist.
Yeah, we should. Exactly. So, you know, I did want to mention those connections, though, because Richard Dawkins is one of these humanists, and I had an interesting interaction with a humanist earlier this week who is actually, I discovered this week that humanists have ordained ministers. So they promote atheism on one side, but then there's humanist ministers, so it's like a religion at the same time. So again, there's that dichotomy that we keep seeing with these people trying to have it both ways.
And I always thought, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, like, of course I'm a humanist, you know, like, I'm a human, like, why wouldn't I be? Like, it's like saying human rights or whatever. It's just, it's like a feel-good fuzzy term, you know. It's like, why would I be against humanism? And then you start to look into it some more, just as how they always do it. So
definitely, do you want to dive into Mr. Elon Musk?
All right.
And that brings us right up to the present, because he just became a Royal Society member in the last few months.
Yeah, let's get a little musky here. So Royal Society, we start to think about, how does the Royal Society influence science, technology? They're basically a PR company. If you take a look at them, they actually have like a really super lame YouTube channel, if you want to check it out, but you can see their agenda just so clearly up on their YouTube channel. And it's fascinating. You think they've been around right since 1660, at least. And to this day, they're still pretty much doing the same thing. So there's close to 2,000 members right now. And so in 2018, Elon Musk, a native to South Africa, was inducted into the Royal Society as a fellow for, according to the Royal Society, quote, his vision of, among other things, colonizing Mars. So they've given him like this preemptive fellowship because he is going to be the guy to colonize Mars. And he's just a great guy. Everyone loves him. He's always dating the hottest celebrity and whatnot. So he's 47 years old. He was a son of a millionaire and a supermodel. He was given a computer and computer classes at a young age, and he showed programming potential and promise at 15. And of course, people know him today. He's somewhat of a celebrity. He's the CEO of Tesla and the SpaceX program, which we mentioned in our show X. So you want to jump in, Jan, okay. So in 1995, Musk had quit graduate school at Stanford University to co-found some internet startups. And he has become known as what's called the PayPal Mafia.
So this is kind of in the brain, sorry.
Yeah, it's an interesting side note, something called the PayPal Mafia. There's all these people. It's like probably like 10 people as part of this, but they've designated the PayPal Mafia. People who, founders of YouTube, founders of Facebook, founders of Yelp. Of course, Elon Musk made his fame and fortune through PayPal. He founded something called, co-founded something called X.com, a
You know,
software platform.
and we you and I did a show a few weeks ago on all the meanings of X, and we didn't even realize X.com in there, but we did mention SpaceX. So X.com actually merged or was renamed into PayPal.
Right. And then others involved with this PayPal creation went on to develop YouTube, LinkedIn, other influential companies, also all tied in, of course, with Silicon Valley. So alongside Musk in the early days of PayPal was Peter Thiel and Max Levchin. So Peter Thiel is a billionaire venture capitalist. Some people might recognize his name in the chat. He was one of the earliest investors of Facebook, and he owns a very bizarre data analytics company called Planeteer, which is backed by, guess who? The CIA. And yeah, so it's like, okay, so when you think about Jeff Bezos and all these people, these celebrity billionaires of just nouveau riche that have just kind of popped up. You wonder where their money comes from. You have to wonder. I mean, billionaires, really? Billionaires. So, Facebook, et cetera. I mean, Zuckerberg, it's just classic CIA puppets here. So, Elon Musk is promoting the colonization of Mars, saying it's at our hedge for humanity against World War III. And so he founded SpaceX in 2002 to counteract the upcoming World War III, and to make humans a multi-planet species. And he says that World War III is going to usher in the new Dark Ages. So more of that sort of propaganda.
As
And
if Terrence McKenna and the drugs and all of them weren't already ushering in, and never mind that the Dark Ages was faked in the first place.
yeah, so it's kind of, I don't know if it's just like a wink to everyone out there. I mean, it's kind of hard not to wonder about that sort of stuff. And then he was at South by Southwest this past year saying that he's SpaceX and him are unveiling plans to have their first chartered flights, if you will, to Mars by the 2020s. So, Jan, do you happen to have South by Southwest in the database at all? That might
I
be
don't think so.
a fascinating addition one of these days, because the more I look into South by Southwest, the stranger it gets.
And that's under Elon Musk. I can add it right now.
I mean, people, if anyone knows some interesting information about South by Southwest or live in Austin area or anything like that, send us your stories, because it just, from what people have told me, it's really weird, and they're trying to bring about like some sort of weird technological society through the promotion of South by Southwest. And so Musk also is one of these people that openly says that IA is going to kill and murder everyone. So he's promoting technology. He's got his Tesla car program, and he speaks all the time about how AI is going to kill people. He's calling for some form of public regulation against AI. He also claims that we must all become cyborgs if we want to survive the AI uprising. So it's kind of course, the dichotomy here. So he's like, AI is going to kill us, so we have to become AI. So at the 2017 World Government Summit in Dubai, Musk argued that in order to avoid becoming redundant in the face of artificial intelligence, we must merge with the machines to enhance our own intellect. So what is that's kind of like the singularity, I guess, that people have been talking about for a
Oh,
while.
don't forget to mention some of these pages I need to bring up.
Yeah, so if you want to pull up, I've got some of these reference, some of his talks are from space.com or Wired reported.
Yeah, I'm pulling those up right now here.
It's all over the news.
Right. So Elon Musk transhumanism claims may not be that far-fetched. You know, so again, they're going to play the dialectic. You're going to have certain members of the Royal Society promoting transhumanism. Again, Julian Huxley, one of the key people, president of the Royal Society, coined the term transhumanism. And then another Royal Society member here, Elon Musk, is out there talking supposedly against transhumanism. So, and we saw this going all the way back with Benjamin and James Franklin and the promotion of inoculations, et cetera, way back in the early 1700s. They're all, you know, playing different sides of this for the Royal Society. Go ahead.
Right. And if you even think about like the beginning as we start, I'm going to talk about GMO crops a little bit for a moment too, but we are going to get more into transhumanism. But even if you think back to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, or people are mentioning sci-fi in the chat, it's they always want to create this dystopian society for us. It's like progress is inevitable and it's totally going to suck. So we can do nothing about it. So it's like it promotes nihilism and all the sort of other sort of stuff. So just a side note on that. So
and thanks to Polygonal again for throwing up some $5 donation there, much appreciated. Please hit the super chat or the Patreon button or whatever, folks. We really appreciate your support. And by the way,
like and share.
And by the way, I am going to be traveling to Maine later this week, so you know, we appreciate any support for all of that as well.
So you can try lobster.
All right, go ahead. You've got a lot more here, didn't you? Did I get into? Oh, okay. We're hitting the Royal Society stuff now.
You might want to talk for a minute. Amit's gonna scream. So.
All right. So, Holly was just about to go into some cool stuff on the Royal Society's promotion of GMO crops, and so that's what we're gonna be hitting here next. I'm just trying to close out some windows. My browser is getting overwhelmed here. I've got too many things open. I probably didn't, you know, here's that PayPal mafia thing for Elon Musk as well. So those of you who want to check these out, this is where we're citing some of this information from. Mars colony to be a hedge against World War III. So, you know, I'm starting to question the whole space thing at this point. You know, you got NASA and SpaceX both faking stuff. But anyway, that's a whole other issue that we'll get into hopefully soon. Hopefully Amit has quieted down now.
Yeah, I think she said her piece. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about how the Royal Society has been instrumental in the promotion of GMO foods, GMO crops all around the world, and GMO animals. So manipulating genes from pretty much the beginning of when we have heard about it as the public. So they have harassed scientists through their peer review program. They basically have a GMO mafia, as many scientists have said that the Royal Society has been working with agrochemical businesses at least since the early 1990s publicly to promote GMO food. So GMO food promotion within the society, they created the debate. So they manage both sides of the scientific debate, all of the testing, I say in quotes, that was done, and its addition into the food system. So some of this I got from The Guardian and other news articles that have reported upon this, but the Royal Society set up a PR unit to harass and to silence scientists who oppose even the questioning of GMO foods and its contamination within our food system. And they called it the rebuttal unit of the Royal Society. And it's been attacking scientists since publicly, at least since 1995. So I think the first official GMO of fruits started to enter supermarkets in 1895, 1996. And then in 1999, the editor of Britain's leading medical journals, The Lancet, said he was threatened by a senior member of the Royal Society, and his job was at risk if he published controversial research questioning the safety of the GMO foods. So it was Dr. Richard Horton was harassed by Peter Lockman, a former vice president and biological secretary of the Royal Society and president of the Academy of Medical Sciences. So president of Professor Lockman, a professor of immunology. So I'm not exactly sure why he has jumped into the defending GMO foods at Cambridge. And he's been a Royal Society member fellow for over 30 years. And he seems to be part of this rebuttal unit that was silencing scientists when they started to come out in opposition or even questioning GMO foods. And you can see, if you go to the Royal Society website, it's the royalsociety.org topics, policies on GM plants. They have a huge section, which is totally PR on GMO foods. So, and then they have a section on genetically modified animals where they're promoting genetically modified animals. And then more recently in 2016, the Royal Society came out against proposals for a European GMO ban. So within people in Europe have been working for a very long time to try to ban GMOs. It was happening quite a bit in Russia right now. And so it started to pick up steam in Europe, just outright banning GMOs at this point, doing what they can to curb the contamination. And the Royal Society came out hard against this ban. And they're claiming that because of the growing world population, because they really care about the little people of the world, they're saying there's a projected need for 50% more food by 2050. And so they claim that they can't afford to give up useful technologies.
And never
like
mind
GMO.
Populations going like this because nobody's having kids because of all of the Royal Society and SRI and Tavistock transgender and vegan propaganda and everything. So people aren't having families. So it's a farce when they claim that, the population will need, twice as much food by then.
So when you start to look in and question, why does the Royal Society, qui bono, why is the Royal Society so connected to promoting GMO foods? I mean, you'd think they'd be somewhat impartial about it, but they use the peer review system to promote it and to shut down any sort of conversation on it, because so many members of the Royal Society are on these boards of agribusiness. So let's see what
they lock and control, just like Thomas Henry Huxley's X Club. They want to control the whole dialogue.
This is the
so-called science that's promoted by the Royal Society.
Oh, sorry, I'm having some computer problems if you want to jump in. So,
there's just we have a few more, we have like four or five more pages that we were going to discuss on Royal Society and the promotion of GMO food. So, genetically modified plants, questions and answers. Of course, they're going to give you the answers that they want you to believe, because they're manipulating this food to have an impact on us. This isn't thermodynamics. This is, we absorb these things into our bodies. Our bodies don't burn them per se. So, they want to control what we are eating, and then they will, of course, patent the seeds of life that give us food so that they have total control over all of that stuff. But this is the Royal Society's YouTube channel, and of course they've got, all of these, or most of them are very fallacious. You can see, what is genetic modification? An introduction to climate change. So they promote all of these pseudoscience ideas, and then they attack anyone who doesn't agree with their pseudoscience, but because they have had a lockdown on what science is for 358 years or so, they're pretty much able to control the dialogue out there. But, you know, once we realize that this group is pseudoscience and they're controlling the dialogue, they're not interested in giving us real science. They're interested in leading the herd in the direction that they want us to go. So when you get that, you can begin to understand, you know, their agendas behind these things. To Be a Machine: Adventures Among Cyborgs, Utopians, Hackers, and Futurists, Solving the Modest Problem of Death. The Modest Problem of Death by Mark O'Connell. So, you know, you got to be uploaded into a machine, by golly. I mean, you know, transhumanism, Julian Huxley and Elon Musk, I mean, they're both out there giving us the dialectic on both sides of this conversation. So fear not, the Royal Society is here to save the day, you know?
So some people just...
Like Mighty Mouse, sorry.
I'm just going to provide a little bit of evidence for people about the connection between Royal Society and agribusiness. So there was Royal Society member Sir Richard Dahl, who had been paid by Monsanto for 20 years to deny that PCBs and Agent Orange had caused cancer. So the Royal Society downplayed a lot of the connections between these chemicals and cancer. And also Patrick Vallance, who is the head of research and development at GlaxoSmithKline, was elected a Royal Society Fellow in 2017. So his election to the Royal Society was also in preparation for his appointment to Chief Scientific Advisor to the UK government. So a little bit of conflict of interest there. So the just interesting side note with the fact, I mean, it seems like critical mass is starting to question GMO foods. I mean, the organic food market is massive. I mean, people pay out the nose for organic food. And you would think that an organization like the Royal Society, which is the gatekeeper of science, would start to realize that they're losing the PR tide on that. So I guess they're just moving forward, like you said, to transhumanism. Yeah, and thanks for pulling up that article, thinking about transhumanism as a religion. Because the more I look into transhumanism and how it's promoted by members of the Royal Society, so as you said with Dawkins and others, and if we go even back to the founding of the Royal Society, it's about enlightenment, it's separation from the church, it's a free thinking, it's promoting the scientific method, of course. And then they start to get into Dawkins straight up talking about atheism, Hawkins, others who promote atheism, but then they promote this, they have this religious fervor about transhumanism, AI, machine learning. If you look on the Royal Society YouTube, they talk about how AI is going to help our artificial intelligence for the social good. It's like a really boring lecture that they have on the YouTube channel there. And they're promoting a book called To Be a Machine: Adventures Among Cyborgs, Utopians, Hackers, and Futurists, Solving the Modest Problem of Death. So it's just, the more you look into it, the more it is a religion to these people. So they're defining transhumanism, the Royal Society, is as a movement whose aim is to use technology to fundamentally change the human condition, to improve our bodies and minds to the point where we become something other and better than the pesky, emotional, flesh and bone animals that we are. It's a philosophy that, depending on how you look at it, can seem hopeful, terrifying, or absurd. So they promote the dichotomy there. It's scary, but we have to do it, but it's good, but we're all going to die. And then as we start to look into AI research, Stephen Hawking served on the scientific advisory board of the Future of Life Institute, a research organization studying catastrophic risks to the human species. And then in a recent talk, Elon Musk reminded the audience that, quote, we are all of us already cyborgs. You have a machine extension of yourself in the form of your phone, your computer, all of your applications. You are already superhuman. So what's the next point here? The next step is to put the chip in the brain, or to put in your hand, or wherever, as we all know, keep the mark, the slow march to the mark, as we all know.
Exactly so. Exactly correct. You know, and we should mention, you know, that, you know, like a lot of people think that, you know, the Tesla cars are more environmentally friendly or whatever because they have zero emissions. Well, that's for the most part true while they're driving down the road. But the issue is that all of the electronics and batteries and everything actually require tons and tons of fuel, diesel fuel, to be mined out of the ground before this stuff is ever made. And then the batteries are completely toxic after the car drives down the road, etc. So they are not zero emission. They're actually more polluting than regular cars. And, you know, so that's a whole issue that we've discussed on previous shows about hybrids and whatnot on abiogenic oil and whatnot. So go ahead.
Yeah, so the Royal Society is also promoting this book called Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. It's a follow-up to a book called Sapiens, talking about mankind. It's by a pretty famous author, Yuval Noah Harari, who is he spoke at the Royal Society for the Encouragement of the Arts. And he claims that transhumanism is, quote, a part of a new technology that will kill old gods and give birth to new gods. So if you need some sort of proof that they talk about this with a religious fervor, look no further than these authors that the Royal Society is promoting right now. So, and then finally, there's someone I had mentioned before, Anthony Lewandowski, who is a part of Uber and the whole self-driving car technology that we're going to be forced upon us. He recently launched something called the Way of the Future Church, which is a new religious organization based on developing godlike artificial intelligence. So yes, they're a certified tax-exempt religious organization that you can join, and they promote the creation of a perfect AI god. And Jan, you had an interesting exchange with some Mormon transhumanists and some other.
Well, yeah,
we can see it. So
yeah, well, somebody had mentioned a Mormon transhumanist group, so I reached out to them. They weren't interested in any facts whatsoever, and you know, it was a few exchanges, and they just, oh well, you know, this they didn't even have citations to back their claims, and they are actually promoted as, like, you know, Mormons for transhumanism, but they have there's no scriptural backing from the Bible or the Book of Mormon or anything. They had nothing. And then they have like 8 or 10 people on their board that all promote this. So, you know, I told them that we would address them in an upcoming show just on transhumanism. So Greg Quinonenas is in the chat. Thanks, Greg. He's whom I did the abiogenic oil shows with. And, you know, when they were uploaded on other channels other than mine, they got really got tens of thousands of views. But amazingly, they don't get tens of thousands of views typically on my channel. Thank you, Oscar, for your $5 donation a moment ago. We're just about done here. You know, I think we should hit it hard here for donations from folks and support for the show and all. We really appreciate your support. Goop just donated $2 and says he just wants to help out. Thank you so much for that. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty good bow or wrap up to our Royal Society series and four parts. It didn't take too long. How many hours is that? 8 hours of Royal Society research for everyone. I hope you enjoy. And yeah, just go on the Royal Society YouTube channel, check them out, see see what the latest PR is that they're promoting, because it's just so fascinating to think of them as this group that started way back in, you know, 1660, and even to this day they're trying to promote transhumanism now. And so for future shows, since we've kind of wrapped up the Royal Society story, we could be looking into the history of humanism and transhumanism if people are interested. So send us your show ideas, of course, and research. We always appreciate research and support as well.
Definitely. And so that's pretty much it. Thank you. Who was that? Somebody just posted another $5. Polygonal did. Polygonal donated like $20 tonight. Thank you so much for that.
Polygonal rocks.
Yeah, I never got an email from you, though. Would love to find out more about your research and work. And so if you want to send me something to investigate, I would love that. So thank you so much.
Someone says more Tartary.
More Tartary. Yeah, we'd like to get to more Tartary soon. Boy, that subject really gets people upset. You know, there's a big long hit piece out there against me for promoting Tartary that, you know, you can't prove anything about it, you know, and never mind all of the contradictions and stuff, but they won't read anything that Fomenko or any of us have done about Scaliger and the cover up of history. So
someone made a video too and called it retardery too.
Oh no. So Rugi says he's got $30 waiting on a donation for the Collins brothers. Well, you know, I can have them back. They did a good show a couple of years ago with me on this. So anyway, we can work on having them back. Thanks. Goop just made another $1. But anyway, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think that's good. I mean, we still working on the Salem book, you guys. So, you know.
Yep. And that's, boy, we can use a lot of help with that. So anyway, folks, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And thank you for your support. See you soon. Let's see, probably next Tuesday and Sunday. There may not be a Logos Media show. If Mark and Caleb and Steven want to run the show while I'm gone on Sunday, I will talk to them about it. And on Tuesday, I will be in Maine still, so probably cutting it close. Possibly, we'll see. So we'll see how Holly's feeling while we're out there. Maybe we'll do an awesome quick show on something or other. So anyway, thank you, folks. And that's a wrap. Good night.